Okay, it's 2 o'clock. Let's get started. Are there any questions? It used to be we would start with loads of good questions. Either you all know everything, or you've gotten less good at asking questions. Yes? Right. This is last week's tutorial, this week's tutorial? This week's tutorial. Ah, right. Phil asked, so, right, I mentioned plus one patterns last week, and I mentioned how much I love them, and that some people don't like them. What I forgot to mention, because I conveniently put it out of my mind, is that some people don't like them so much that they actually kicked them out of the official Haskell definition. So they're no longer part of official Haskell. So what we should have done was edited that to take them out. You can either edit the file to take them out, or there's a flag you can give to Haskell that will tell it, even though these aren't part of Haskell, accept it anyway. But I can't remember what the flag is off the top of my head. It should be easy to look up. We'll try to get it circulated to everybody so that it's easy to use. Thanks for pointing that out. That's a very good question. Any other good questions? Okay. I know that not all of you have no questions whatsoever. So think about that for a minute, because I'm going to come back to it. As I mentioned last week, there was an extra tutorial last week. There's an extra tutorial this week. It's for anybody who wants a little bit of additional practice before the exam. What you, just as you earn your right to go to tutorial by doing the tutorial work, you earn your right to go to the extra tutorial by doing the extra tutorial work, which is just download any previous year's class exam or final exam and have a go at doing it. And then take whatever questions you've got left to the extra tutorial. And everybody is strongly encouraged to do that if they want to, right? If you feel you're on top of it and you did well on the class exam, then you might not have any reason to want to do it, but if you want to do it, you're extremely welcome to. How many people are planning to do this and go to the extra tutorial this week? Okay, just wanted to get a sense of whether we need to lay on anything extra to deal with that or not. Okay, any questions about that? So in planning this week's lectures, I thought, oh, right, time to teach them about parser combinators. And I thought, no, every time I teach them about parser combinators, their head hurts. So I will put that off. I will teach you about them because they are beautiful. But we will put that off till next week, which I think means there will be a little bit of extra time this week. I'm not certain. It depends on the pace at which we go through the material that I've prepared. And I could prepare some additional material as well. But I thought maybe people would welcome some revision. Would you like some revision? Okay, then you have to tell me what you want me to revise. If I spend some extra time on revision, what would you like me to cover? Sorry, you said?
Abstract data types.
Abstract data types. Okay, we're going to have some revision of that today as well. What else? Yes?
Sorry, this isn't for revision, but a question.
Okay. Right. What's the difference between type, data, and new type?
What type does, but for data and new type, they kind of work similarly, but I checked on Google and apparently they evaluated differently, so I was just wondering.
Right, they are slightly different. I will explain that when I get to the revision of abstract data types in today's lecture. But it's an excellent question. Thank you. That's perfect. I will get to it. If I don't, ask me again. Good. Any other things you'd like to see covered? Algebraic data types as opposed to abstract data types? Yes? See some heads nodding. Any basic stuff with lists, recursion, comprehensions? No. Okay, if you say, no, I've seen enough about comprehensions and recursion, I don't want to see that again, go like this. If you do want to see comprehensions and recursion, go like this. Oh, one or two, okay. Okay, not too many heads nodding. So I think if you've got questions about comprehensions or recursion, the right thing to do is to do this, prepare for the extra tutorial, and go to the extra tutorial. I won't cover that here because there weren't enough nodding heads. Okay? Right, okay. Any other questions? Right. If you have other topics you want covered, I know people are shy sometimes, come up and see me after the lecture, drop me an email, but do it soon because I need to prepare what I'm going to do tomorrow. Actually, I realized I wasn't completely fair. So I mentioned algebraic data types. And I saw a few people nod their heads, right? These are things declared with data declarations. But I didn't do the same things before. So let's see. How many people know enough about algebraic data types and don't want to see any more examples? Go like this if you don't want to see more. Very few. Go like this if you do want to see more. Okay, so I made the right guess, right? Lots more people are interested in that. Okay, I'll have to come up with something. Competition! Right, if you've downloaded this week's tutorial, you will see at the end that there's a competition. The 2011 Informatics 1 competition. We have this every year. You can see the results from past years on the website. The prize is a bottle of champagne, or equivalent in book tokens, but the real prize is glory. Right? You can put down on your CV, I won first place, or second place, or third place, or whatever, in the Informatics 1 competition. Often, all of those are available. In 2009, we had many, many good entries. So we ended up giving out 7 awards. Right? We gave 1 first prize, 2 second prizes, and 4 third prizes. If we get enough this year, we'll do 15. Right? And everything will have to go up a little bit. So I encourage everybody to enter. We've always had some entries of a very, very high standard, and others that are, just nice, not incredibly high standard. I want to mention that because I don't want everybody to look back at the old ones and feel, oh, my goodness, the best of those I couldn't possibly compete with. You don't need to compete with the best of them. You just need to compete with yourself. Do the best you can. Right? Having a go at trying something new and seeing how far you can get is always a great way to learn, to make yourself feel happy with knowledge. And so I encourage you all to have a go at it. And you'll make yourselves happy, you will make me happy, because I'll enjoy seeing these things, and you'll make everybody else happy, because we'll go through them all in the final week. We'll look at the entries. The competition is sponsored by Galois. Yes, question. Is my microphone off? That's very bad. I thought I tested it. It was working and then it stopped. That's very bad indeed. Unless this thing... Oh, look at that. Uh-huh. It is working and telling me low battery. Does anybody have 2 AA batteries on them? No. That's not too surprising. No other spares in here. Right, the battery has run down, and I'll just have to report that. I expect it'll go. Are you going to go off and ask the... You have to... You're kidding. Wow! This man deserves a round of applause. Absolutely. Right, you may collect these back after the lecture if you'd like them. Wow, okay. I think that means the speaker won't go out now. Excellent, thank you very much. That is amazing. You guys always amaze me. You're so talented. Right, it's spelled Balgawa. If you like Haskell programming, you want to get paid to do it, go work for Galwa. They have some of the best Haskell programmers in the world. And you can find out more about them at their website. You don't need to do this on your own. You're welcome to do it in a team. If you do it in a team, list everybody in the team in the entry. If you just do it by yourself, make sure to put your own name on the entry. It'd be very sad if we had somebody who won, but we didn't know who it was. The way to enter is to just email your entry to Phil Scott. You should know his email by now, but there it is. He's the TA for the course. I didn't put it on this, but your entry will be a code that needs to run. Sometimes there will be some directions that people know to run it. Phil Scott will go and actually try running all these things to see what the result looks like. You can also submit a PDF or a JPEG or any kind of indication of what the result looks like. But please do submit the running code, because that's what we end up judging. If there are any directions that need to be followed, be sure to include them. And the deadline will be 4 p.m. Wednesday, the 23rd of November. That's a week from Wednesday. Okay. Any questions about that? Yes?
What is the competition? What are you trying to do?
Oh, yes, very good. Does help if you know what you're thinking. Draw a pretty picture, please. So this week's tutorial is about one way of drawing pictures using turtle graphics. You can do something interesting with turtle graphics if you want. You can go out to the web and look around for libraries for doing graphics in Haskell. Pick any library you want. Do any kind of graphics you want. So just draw a pretty picture using Haskell in some interesting way. Yes? Can you submit something that you've already started? Yes, I think that'd be perfectly fine. Yeah, I think that would be okay. Yes? Can you do something animated? Absolutely. Yes?
Does only the result get rated, or the source code is rated?
No, we look at your code. Sometimes if we think that's really pretty code but not an interesting picture, we give a special picture, a special award for really interesting code but not an interesting picture.
So we should try to command the code, for example, and do it by beautiful code.
Beautiful code is good, yes. Beautiful pictures are good, beautiful code is good. Any other questions? Okay. How many people think they might have a go at this? Brilliant. Excellent. Okay. All those of you who didn't raise your hand, think again. Okay. Any other questions about the competition? Okay. So now I'm going to teach you about type classes. Type classes are one of the things that makes Haskell unique. There were and are many, many other functional programming languages. But at the time we were doing Haskell, we realized, oh, there's no good solution to this particular problem, which I will show you. And we came up with type classes as a solution. You've all seen things like Ike and Orde and then this funny double arrow in types. I've said, I'll explain that later. I'm going to explain it now. So here's an example. The elem function takes an element, a value of some type A, and a list of values, also of type A, and it returns true or false depending on whether or not A appears in the list. Right? So element 3 and the list 1, 2, 3, 4 returns true. But element 5 and the list 1, 2, 3, 4 returns false. And here are three different ways of writing the same thing. Right? You can write with a comprehension, you can write it with a recursion, or you could write it in higher order style. Right? So with a comprehension, we'd say, for each y drawn from y's, return whether or not x is equal to y. So you'll get a list of trues and falses. and then just return the OR of that. So if anything returns true, if anything in that list is true, say yes, that element appears in the list. Using recursion, if it's the empty list, well, nothing appears in that, so we say false. And if it's a non-empty list, check if x is equal to the head. If so, return true. Or, double bar is OR, if x appears anywhere in the tail, return true. Higher order is essentially the same as this, but now to check x equals y, we can map the x equals function over the list y's, and then to find out OR is actually defined as fold R of the OR operator and false. So that should be fairly familiar and boring to people. Are there any? But maybe people have questions. Any questions about how element works? So the reason I'm doing this is to point out that no matter what you're doing, you need to use equality. And if you don't know how to check whether an element in this list is equal to the given value, then you couldn't write the element function. Right? So you need equality defined over this type A. Now, it turns out there are some types for which equality isn't defined. Right? For most types, it is. Right? So if I want to see if 1 is an element of 2, 3, 4, well, no, it's not. Is the character O the element of the list of characters WORD? Yes, it is. It's the second one, the one in with index 1. Is given a list of pairs of values, we could check that a pair appears in that list. Or given a list of strings, which are themselves lists of characters, we could check whether a string appears in that. So here we've got a list of characters, and here a list of characters. So we're checking for equality between a list of characters and a list of characters. Now, if we tried to say, right, does this function appear in this list of functions, that says, nope, I can't do that. And it reports this in a rather funny way. It says, no instance for eek, A goes to A. So these are all, oh, does it? That's interesting. Right, this is the identity function. Its type is indeed A goes to A for any A. This is the negation function. Its type is A goes to A for any type A that negation is defined on. And this is double negation. Right? So the negative of the negative of x, if that's defined, would usually be x, right? So we would expect that this function and this function are the same. So equality should check for that. Poor stupid computer. It can't figure this out. Right? We can't expect the computer to say, oh, look, the identity function is the same as the double negation function. So in general, it's actually very easy to tell if two functions are equal, right? Just take every possible argument the function can be applied to and apply it and see if it gives the same result. So if you know equality for the arguments and equality for the results, you can work out equality for functions. There's just one problem. Most functions take an infinite number of arguments. So checking equality in that way will take an infinite amount of time. Right? If this is a function over integers, there are too many integers to test in the entire lifetime of the universe. So the way for dealing with equality on functions is to say, I'm sorry, I don't know how to do that. And that precisely is what having this in the type lets us do. So this says you're only allowed to work out elem for things for which you know how to compute equality. If you don't know how to compute equality, then you're not allowed to apply elem. So functions is an example of where you're not allowed to apply elem. So now we have to actually tell the computer what this means. So what we do is we say, there's a class called eek of A, and we give one or more functions that belong to that class. In this case, there's for this example, I'm just going to define one, the equality function. And the type of that is given of the two A's return a Boolean for any A. As long as it's an A for which we know how to define equality. So this says A is a type for which we know how to define equality if there's a function called equals with this type. So for instance, int is a function, because there's a function ekint, which is built into the computer, that checks two integers for equality. So the type of ekint is int to bool. We can find equality for characters, right, by saying use ord to convert the character to an integer and then check the integers for equality. So notice this definition uses the equals defined here. We can check if two pairs are equal, sorry, if a pair of values is equal, by saying, right, when is the pair uv equal to the pair xy? Well, of course, when u is the same as x and v is the same as y. So what this tells us is, if we know how to do equality on type A, and we know how to do equality on type B, then we can do equality on AB pairs. So for instance, if I have a pair of an integer and a character, I can check if two pairs are equal to each other. And indeed, we did that right here. Similarly, if I know how to define equality on the type A, then I can define equality on the type list of A. Right? You all know how to write out this definition at this point. So we could write it very high order, right? We could say, check the two lists are the same length. If they are, zip them together and check that all the elements are equal. Here's the recursive definition, right? Is the empty list equal to the empty list? Absolutely. Is the empty list equal to any non-empty list? No. Is a non-empty list equal to the empty list? No. So here we have two non-empty lists. When are they equal? If their heads are equal, and if their tails are equal. Fairly straightforward. Notice what's going on here, right? Because the function we're defining, equality, we're defining in terms of equality. Now this bit is just ordinary recursion. Is this recursion? Not really. This is a different equality function. Right? If we're talking about a string, a list of characters, then A would be character. And we're saying if you know how to do equality for characters, you know how to do equality for lists of characters. And here we've got the equality function on characters, whereas here we've got the equality function on strings. Okay? Are these definitions clear enough to people? Are there any questions about that? And notice the keywords, right? We say class when we're defining a new type class. And we say instance when we're defining a type that belongs to that type class. So I can actually explain to you very precisely what that means. We're even going to use a little bit of data abstraction here. Sorry, there's a question. How do you add an instance when you need one? So not surprisingly, all of this is built into Haskell. But you can define a new instance in exactly the same way. So if it's an existing type class, you can just define an instance of it. We'll see some examples of that later on. You can also define new type classes in this way and define instances of those. So you do it essentially by writing something just like this. So I can explain to you exactly what that means. So this is quite nice, right? We can define Haskell with type classes by a translation into Haskell without type classes. You have a question?
Just going back to the element, equality A implies the equality list of A.
Mm-hmm.
When it's checking for the equality of A, does it essentially just go back to class equality? Because I'm trying to think of how it processes if you're doing a list.
Oh, good question. So what happens if we're doing a list of lists? So then we want to know, is equality defined on lists of characters? And I'll say, well, it's defined if it's defined on lists of characters. How do we know if it's defined on list of characters? Ah, well, it's defined on lists of characters if it's defined on characters. And we know it's defined on characters.
So it can recursively reference the class.
Correct. It can just to repeat in case anybody in the room didn't hear. Yes, it can recursively reference the class. That's correct. So let's see how the translation works. What I'm going to do is introduce a new type, ecdict of A, and this has a constructor, ecd, and it says the member of this is an A to bool. So this is just a way of taking an equality function and giving it a new type, calling it an equality dictionary. The words class and dictionary, by the way, come from object-oriented programming. We stole them. So this is similar to, but not the same as, what you'll learn about when you learn about object-oriented programming next term. So to extract, so the reason you have a dictionary is to pack several functions together. In this case, we're treating equality as if it's just one thing. In practice, it's actually two things, the equals function and the not equals function. For other things like ordering, we'll see that there you can get many more functions in a type class. So a type class might, in general, have an arbitrary number of functions. And what we're doing here is building something that will pack all of those together. So we need to extract each function from this dictionary. So the EQ will just extract from the dictionary the actual function. So notice that the type of one of these things is ecdict of int, say, whereas equals would take the ecdict and get out of it your A to bool function that you can actually apply. So now element, what we're going to do is say, no, it really has an extra argument, which is the dictionary that tells you how to compute equality on these things. And then each of these, however you write it, takes one more argument. And now instead of saying x equals y, you just say, take the dictionary, get out the equality function, and apply that to the two arguments. Now we need to build up the dictionaries, right? And you can build up the dictionary by looking. Each instance declaration corresponds to what creation of one dictionary. So the one for dint, remember we just said it's the ecint function which is built in. So we just wrap the constructor around that. For characters, we wrap it around this function f. And what does f do? It takes the ord of both of its arguments and then applies the equality for integers. Right? We've written an equals equals before. Well, that turns into calling eq on an appropriate dictionary, in this case, the dictionary for integers. So pair, now pair, remember we wrote that we need to know equality on A and equality on B. So since we need to know about equality on two types, we take a pair of dictionaries, one for each type. And then we need to create a dictionary for AB pairs. So that would just be ecd again of F, where F takes two pairs and uses the equality from the A dictionary on the first pair and equality from the B dictionary on the second pair. So when we do the translation, you can see very precisely which equality is being used. Finally, right, we defined it for lists. So we said, given equality on the elements, we can get equality on the list of the elements. So we take an extra argument d. Again, we return ecd of f. And here's the definition of f. And notice that, remember I told you these two equalities were different? So if this was a string, A would be character. If this is a list of strings, A would be string. So here we would have equality on the elements, and here we have equality on the lists. So So you can see that again by looking here. Here we have equality on D, the elements. And here we have equality on lists of those elements. And we actually are using the function DList, which builds up the dictionary, to build up the dictionary again. So this is, here's where the recursion comes in, is now DList is defined in terms of DList. Then those examples I show you all turn into passing in the appropriate dictionary. So for a list of integers, you use the integer dictionary. For a string, that's a list of characters, so we use the character dictionary. For integer character pairs, we build up the appropriate pair dictionary. And for we're checking now whether a string is equal to another string, so that would be DList applied to the character dictionary. If we needed equality on lists of characters, we'd use DList of DList of DCHAR, and so on. So notice I've written this in blue, capital, large letters. You know what that means, right? I'm going to jump up and down, because it's important. Haskell uses types to write code for you. You should, yes, there are people smiling. Excellent. You should all be smiling, right? What happens when you have to write code? Right? Even if you're excellent at writing code, you go, oh no, I've got to write some more code. What could be better than to have the thing write the code for you based on the types? You don't need to do it yourself. It does it for you. We actually have a fancy name for this. The technical name for it is generic programming. But the basic idea is just you say once what you want, and then every single type you can get, it writes it for you. Notice that when I've written this, how many different types have I defined equality at? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4. Four types. How many people think four types? Five? Six? How many people think more than six? About half of you. So half of you haven't raised your hand yet. What is it? Seven? Eight? No, you're just unwilling to commit. Did somebody want to toss out a number of types that we've defined this at? A lot. That's absolutely right. Yes?
Can you say it's infinite since the list was recursive?
Right. It's infinite because for every type A, I've defined it also a type list of A. It's even bigger than that. It's a bigger infinity. Actually, the two infinities are technically the same size. Right, but for every two types which I define, I also define it a pair. Right, so it's defined on integers, characters, lists of integers, lists of characters, lists of integers, lists of characters, lists of pairs which have a list of characters, and another pair, which is an integer, and another pair, which is a list of characters with a list of character-integer pairs. Right. All those programs have been specified just by writing that amount of code. Right. So I feel like one of these guys on late-night TV. Not only do you get the steak knives, but also, right? Except, you know, they just go on for like eight different things that you get for your money, but I could go on forever, literally. So you get lots and lots of functions written in this way. Okay. So you don't need to actually know the details of how to do the translation, but I wanted to show that to you so you'd understand there's no magic there. The type classes just translate into ordinary Haskell without type classes. And also that you could see how useful it is. Where's the example I want? Right, to have this, oh, did I give the translation of Ellen? Yeah. How useful it is to have higher order parameters. Right. In this case, the parameter is not even a function, it's a data structure that contains a function. So being able to build things out of functions is extremely useful. And the Haskell compiler just does this routinely when you write code. So in this way, it's the blue bits are bits of code that it's writing for you automatically based just on what the type is. So we have not just one type class, but many of them. So the real equality type class, as I mentioned, has not one thing in it, but two. So the dictionary now would build something containing a pair of functions, one for computing equality and one for computing inequality. We also have this handy thing, which when you're defining the class, you can put in some code, and it says, well, you're allowed to define inequality, but if somebody's defined equals and they've not defined not equals, it's easy to compute not equals, just use not of equals. Similarly, the ord class has four things in it, and three of them can be defined in terms of the other one. So this is actually important. If you define ord, you must define, and you don't want to define all four things, you must define this one, less than or equal. The other three are defined in terms of less than or equal. If you don't do that, actually it's got some other stuff as well, and they're interdefined in terms of each other. And what happens if you try to define less than, say, it says, it then looks and says, well, there's this operation compare, greater than or equal is defined in terms of compare, compare is defined in terms of greater than or equal is defined in terms of compare, compare is defined in terms of greater than or equal, it just goes around and around in a loop forever. So you have to break the loop by giving the definition of greater than, sorry, of less than or equal, otherwise it goes into an infinite loop. That's an the technical name for that aspect of the design is unfortunate. It's my fault. Another useful example class is show. So a type A belongs to the class show. If there's a function show that takes an A and returns a string. This is how we convert values into strings. Right? So before we've been writing show for each data type we had, like we had a show expert and a show prop and so on. By using type classes, you can just define show at each of these different types. So let's see how that works, right? Basic built-in type like Booleans, right? Well, you know how to define equality for Booleans, right? False equals false, true equals true, otherwise it's false. You know how to define less than or equal, that's the one we need to define. True is not less than or equal to false, so true less than or equal to false is false. Everything else gives true. And to show it, we just return the corresponding string. For pairs, we already saw how you define equality on pairs. Less than or equal is very similar. The pair xy is less than or equal to the pair x prime y prime if x is smaller than x prime, or x and x prime are equal, and y is smaller than y prime. So the ordering on pairs is very important. First, you compare the first element of the pair, and if one's smaller, that's it. It's smaller, regardless of the second element. And if the first elements are equal, then you go on and compare the second elements of the pair. Does that, have people seen that kind of ordering before? You've all seen that ordering somewhere, right? But on lists rather than pairs. We'll look at that in a minute. Yes?
So does that mean if the first element is smaller than the other first element, but the second element is larger than the other first element, it returns true, that thing that's false
Right. So greater than is always, of course, the inverse of less than. Right. But if you take this comparison, A and a big number, let's use 100 million, and this one, B, minus 42, which of these two is bigger? How many people think the first one is bigger? How many people think the second one is bigger? Right, you compare the first components, B is bigger than A, so this one is bigger. We never compare the second two. Even though this is a lot bigger than that, doesn't matter, we're not comparing them. Okay? So that one is less than that one. But how does it know it's less? I only defined less than or equal, right? How does it know it's less than? Because, if you go back, less than is defined as being less than or equal and not equal. Right? And we've already defined equality for pairs up here. Okay? Similarly, to show a pair, you need to know how to show its components, and you just print out the two components surrounded by parentheses and with a comma in the middle. Okay? List is very similar, right? We already know equality on lists. Ordering is very similar. The empty list is less than or equal to every list. A non-empty list is not less than or equal to the empty list. If you've got two non-empty lists, if the heads are smaller, it's smaller. Otherwise, if the elements are equal, compare the there's a bug there, right? What's the bug? Right, that should be less than or equal. It'll be less than or equal if the tails are less than or equal. What's an example? Which of these two is smaller? Bar or bat? Bar. Why? Right. The B's are equal, so we look at the tails. The A's are equal, so we look at the tails. And R is smaller than T. So bar is smaller than bat. Bat and battery, which is smaller? Sorry? Bat. Why? B and B are equal, so we look at the tails. A and A are equal, so we look at the tails. T and T are equal, so we look at the tails. This is the empty list. The empty list, and we compare it with Turi, and which is smaller? The empty list. Why? Because we said the empty list is smaller than everything. Okay? Do people see how that works? Where have you seen that before? Where do you use that ordering?
Numbers.
Well, no. Numbers are different, right? 2,357. Right? You look at the first digits, 2 is bigger, so 2 must be bigger. Right, but we don't use that ordering for numbers. Right? We use a different ordering for numbers. So notice that 2 is less than 1,357, but as strings, if you look at the string 2 and the string 1,357, the string 2 is greater than 1,357. Very important thing to note, so thank you for that. So that's, numbers actually is not a good example. List of numbers printed, you could use it, yes?
Dictionaries!
Right, this is how you look up a word in a dictionary. And the name for this kind of ordering is called dictionary order. It's also sometimes called lexicographic order. The reason it's sometimes called lexicographic order rather than dictionary order is because lexicographic is a fancy word for dictionary. Yes? Could you use the order things to compare a character directly to a number? Very interesting question. So if I want to say, is A and 42, I want to know, right, do I put a less than or a greater than sign there? What is the answer? If I went to GHCI and I typed A less than 42, would it return true or false? How many people think true? How many people think false? How many people think something else? And what is the something else? Type error. Type error! Right, it's a type error. So you cannot compare an integer and a character. Okay, and then showing a list, you would just show the components separated by a comma. Here's one way of doing that. Now, here's the nice thing. If you'd written out the normal definitions of bool or pair or list using algebraic data constructors, after writing the algebraic data constructor, you can say deriving. And there are some fixed number of classes, I think it's 7, that are built into Haskell. Which you may mention after this. We're going to talk about 4 of them today and tomorrow. So eke, ord, and show, which we've just been looking at, are 3 of those 7 classes. So after writing the declaration, you can just say deriving eke, ord, show, and you get, for bools, all that code. You can say, where am I? I'm going the wrong way. That's one. You can say for pair, deriving eke, ord, show, and you get all that code. Right? You 6 lines of code. You can say deriving eke, ord, show for lists, and you get that page of code. You can do your own data type, like expr, and say deriving when you're done, and you get all that code. We'll actually go through in exact detail what that means tomorrow. Okay? But you notice that for the second time, I've written things in blue large letters. Haskell uses types to write the code for you. So you just give the data declaration, you just say deriving, and you get all that code for equality, for ordering, and for displaying written for you automatically. And there's a hand up with a question. Oh, very good question. Ord is only... ord is only defined when eke is defined. And indeed, if we go back to... where is it? Right. Here... We said ord is only defined when eke is defined. So what this means is you can never write an instance for ord unless there's already an instance for eke. And what this means is if you say deriving ord, it will say, I can't. You have to derive eke as well. So you can't say deriving ord, you have to say deriving eke ord. The order in which you write them doesn't matter. You could say deriving ord eke, but you must derive both. Good question, thank you. Okay, so we've got a lot more to go through with reviews of abstract data types and other data type declarations, but we'll have that tomorrow because we're at time. So go off and let Haskell write the code for you. Do you want your batteries back? Thanks very much.
Haskell book.
Yes.
Are we allowed to use any other textbooks? Because I have this one, and it's fairly good.
Oh yeah, you're welcome to use that. That's fine.
Sure was.
Sorry?
It's written by you.
Yes, I noticed that.
It's actually really good.
Sorry?
It's actually really good.
Oh, thank you.
I think I prefer it to the other Haskell textbook. It's kind of laid out in a more easy to understand.
Oh, good. I'm glad you find it that way. The reason it's not the official textbook is because some people find it too mathematical. Sorry? Wednesday at 4. If you want to do it anyway, do the work, and let me know, and I'll answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Maybe I wasn't paying attention, but what is the difference between NewType and Data then?
I haven't got to it yet, but I will get to it tomorrow.
Okay. Because I checked on Google, apparently one uses lazy evaluation, the other uses strictness, or the way that they...
That's not exactly right, but here, let me explain it to you.
Yeah.
Just log out here.
Because I noticed in last week's tutorial, we were able to define, I think it's key map using both, but there were subtle differences. So, yeah.
Let's see. So it does relate to lazy evaluation. Just trying to think of the best way to explain it. Do a data declaration,
mm-hmm.
like a list,
mm-hmm.
is either nil or columns of an A, like a list of A.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then when we build, for each element of the list, we're going to allocate a node in the computer memory.
Yeah.
And the node will either say, I'm a nil,
mm-hmm.
or it will say, I'm a cons,
yeah.
of an A,
yeah.
a list of A.
Yeah.
So by analogy, if we say we had eat dipped today, in fact, what we put in there is one of these things. By analogy, this says there's a node there, and it's got one component, which is going to be this function.
Yeah.
You instead do this, it says, I'm not going to allocate a node. One of these is going to be exactly the same as one of these.
Mm-hmm.
Consider the type's different, but the actual representation of the computer memory will be exactly the same.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the difference between new type and okay. data.
So
and then you might say, well, why did you use data for the dictionary then? Wouldn't it have been better to use NewType?
Yeah.
In fact, for a dictionary with just one component, NewType is better.
Mm-hmm.
But since dictionaries can, in general, contain many components,
then
if you had a pair of things,
uh-huh.
then it's a new component, like a pair.
Yeah.
So this only works if there's exactly one thing written after the constructor.
Yeah.
Sorry, that should have been the same thing again, of course.
Okay.
So one allocates more memory and the other one doesn't, and then that ends up impacting laziness.
Mm.
But the real thing is, this way you allocate one thing, this way you don't.
Okay.
But it only works if you have exactly one constructor with exactly one field.
Okay. Otherwise, we would have to use data then.
Right.
Okay, thank you very much.
That was a good question, and I'll try to answer it tomorrow, and if I don't, please bring it up again, because other people will want to know the same thing you want to know.
Okay.
Can I ask you about the parallel Pascal?